And Fast Track is presented by our friends at Puente Hills Toyota. Got a car that's just sitting around not being used? Bring it to Puente Hills Toyota today for an instant cash offer. Puente Hills Toyota is the house of yes. All right, coin flip time, Momo.
Yeah?
One side of the coin, and this is a preview for what's coming up on the show. One side of the coin, instant replay continues as currently constructed in the NBA. Hmm. Other side of the coin, we get rid of it completely. Call it in the air.
We get rid of it completely.
We get rid of it completely.
Oh,
there you go.
That's
there
exciting.
You, go. You win that coin
all
flip.
All right, okay. All right, I'm going to go first. All right. Hey, Mace, 48-year-old Bartolo Colon has not pitched in the MLB in Major League Baseball since 2018.
Woo-hoo.
But he's now
sexy.
Playing for the
he's
now playing for the Mexican
sexy.
League. Okay, and he threw a complete game 5 hitter on Saturday night.
What?
Struck out 7, allowed 2 runs. He's got a 3.56 ERA in 5 starts. He's 48 years old. Mace, do you look like he at Colon like, hey, it's time to move on with your life. You're 48. Let's move on. Or do you say keep on pitching as long as someone will have you?
I mean, if he likes pitching. If yeah. this is what brings him joy, if he's like, what was that guy said, follow your bliss? Somebody
yeah.
said that. If he's following his bliss, if he's doing what he loves, then I don't see any reason why he should quit as long as somebody will have him. And by the way, if he pitches really well, and I would imagine that Major League Baseball scouts will take a look at Bart Colon and see if he's still got something good enough for the major leagues. He's crafty. He's smart. He's done this a long time. And I think Satchel Paige pitched till he was like 78 years old or something. Satchel Paige just kept pitching.
He was till he was what?
I think 78. Somebody look that up. Maybe I'm exaggerating. But
I think you're
like
exaggerating,
that.
But that's still pretty cool. I totally agree with you. I think that you only get to be a professional athlete for a certain amount of time in your life. I remember doing a story on a guy named John Lindsay. He was a Dodger minor leaguer who got called up at the age of, I think he was 33 when he got called up. But his first time ever, he was like real life Crash Davis. Okay, one time in the bigs. Got 13 at-bats, that was it. And I remember asking him, like, hey, you know, you're married, you have a kid now, like, you don't really make that much money in the minor leagues, you've never gotten a shot. How much longer are you going to do this? And he goes, as long as I can.
Yeah.
Like, what am I
going
to do when I retire? Like, I'm just, you know, I have my whole life ahead of me to be retired. He runs a baseball school now. I think he's a teacher. He's having a good life.
Here you go. I mentioned Satchel Paige.
Yeah,
he died when he was 75, so no way that he pitched until he was 78.
He pitched until he was 59. He's the oldest pitcher ever to pitch in the major leagues. So I had exaggerated some, but he pitched almost to, basically that is retirement age.
It's 59
years old. Impressive.
Yeah,
all right, it's
pretty good.
Me.
Fast Track.
All right, so everybody knows Jeff Bezos is the richest guy in the world.
Yeah.
Everybody knows that he owns Amazon and some other stuff. Everybody knows that he's sending himself into space. For next month. First regular guy in space on one of his own spacecrafts.
Yeah.
Now, there is a petition to deny Jeff Bezos coming back to Earth after he goes to space.
Oh, no.
That's great.
So here's the question.
Okay.
Is there anything, and Jeff Bezos has got a terrible rap, and there are plenty of reasons to be critical, but is there anything that Jeff Bezos could do to be more well-liked?
Ooh. That's a really good question. Well, you can start by paying some more taxes.
Taxes! How about that?
That was a heck of a story. I forget who
Jeff
did
Bezos,
it.
Jeff Bezos, if you missed this, Jeff Bezos didn't pay income tax for 2 years, and 1 year he got a $4,000 refund. Think about that. What was your refund? Jeff Bezos, richest man in the world,
brutal.
Got a $4,000 refund.
Yeah, I like the excuse of like, well, those are the rules.
Yeah, those are the rules.
Yeah, it's just really terrible. Really terrible optics. Yeah. Terrible.
Anything he can do.
Yeah, he could do that. Is he charitable? Do we know of him? Man, Bill Gates is extremely charitable. He like is the largest sponsor of vaccines all over the world. He has the Gates Foundation. He's like giving away. So he could do a lot more. I think he could do a lot more.
Yeah, his ex-wife is always in the news. She literally just yesterday, she gave away like $3 billion to what she said were like underfunded and undervalued different types of charities, a lot of them being like social justice and equality organizations. I don't hear about him nearly as much as I hear about her and her charitable.
Yeah, and I also think he could they pay their workers well, okay, relatively speaking. However, that story, the anti-union stuff, that
that's
that rough. That doesn't look great. You know, not just the anti-union, it's just the stories that came out about how you're on the clock and they have an app that tracks how far you go and how much you're working. And that's a little big brother for me. I don't like that.
Yeah. As it turns out, Jeff Bezos gives a lot of money to charity. We just don't hear about it. He's the third biggest donor to charitable causes in the world.
Okay, that's good.
But wait, if he's the richest person, shouldn't he be the most charitable person in the world?
Yeah, I mean, 100 million here, 100 million there. Yeah. He's given out a bunch of
money. Well, I will
say
this. When you are the president of is he president even anymore? I think he stepped down.
No, he stepped down to devote himself to more charitable causes.
Okay, so that's good. But I also think you have a huge, giant multinational corporation that has incredible power and influence over our society. So I would like to see a company like that use its power and influence for good and for big societal things. Because in a lot of ways, they have the most infrastructure of anybody. I mean, they have the most infrastructure. Amazon, would we have got through the pandemic without Amazon delivering all our stuff?
No.
They have so much power and influence. And so in some ways, they have more power and influence than a government.
Jeff Bezos gave more to charity than anybody in the world.
Okay, that's good.
Okay, he should.
He gave $10 billion to charity. And he contributed $100 million to Feeding America. That was one of the causes that he donated to. So he gives a lot of money. He just doesn't get any press for it. Yeah, I don't think so. I mean, part of it is he looks like a villain. I mean, I hate to say if you look at it, I mean, he could be a villain in an Austin Powers movie.
Yeah, he could. He does look like it. Yeah,
you know, he's got the slick head and he's got that Dr. Evil look about him. I think that's one of the reasons why people don't like him. Plus, he's super rich. Yeah. Super rich and didn't pay taxes. Yeah. I think that's the big thing. All right, it's to you.
All right. Hey, last night on the James Corden show, the Friends cast joined them for a sing-along, the carpool karaoke. He does that popular bit, carpool karaoke. And they sang along to I'll Be There For You, right? The theme song to Friends.
Oh, that's nice.
Nice. Carpool karaoke is one of the best bits going on television.
Yes, it is.
You have a lot of good bits on radio. What is your favorite current bit that's going on in either TV or radio, and what is your favorite all-time bit?
Favorite all-time bit was when I was working at 93QWRQN in Toledo, Ohio. And we were the little guys, right? We were the low wattage station, 3,000 watts from 20 miles out of town. And the other station, the other top 40 station we were competing against, was giving away $1,000 an hour on every Thursday. So it was $1,000 Thursday. Every hour they would give away a grand. And I'm like, okay, so what can we do? How do we compete with this? How do we compete with them giving away $1,000 an hour? So I started Thousand Island Thursday.
Ooh.
And every hour we gave away a bottle of Thousand Island dressing. And you qualified to win a trip from any island in the world.
Cool.
So any of a thousand islands. So we confused everybody. They never really got full credit for $1,000 Thursday because we were doing Thousand Island Thursday.
Yeah.
And it was actually a pretty good prize and a pretty good bit. So that's probably my favorite.
Yeah. I like that. We should do that here. I like it.
Thousand Island Thursday?
Yeah,
sure.
Why not? Let's get an airline sponsor.
The old stuff still works. The old bits still work.
I know. That's good.
All right. There are giant toxic toads in Florida.
Whoa.
These are gigantic yellowish-brown cane toads which have invaded Florida after a wetter-than-normal spring.
Wow.
They can grow as big as 9 inches long.
Whoa!
With large triangular glands behind the eyes that contain a high load of milky white toxin. They are harmless to people, but conceivably could really, really make a dog sick. There are literally gangs of these toads on the streets at night in Florida.
Oh, my gosh.
So during the pandemic, we've talked about rats in New York. Everybody said the rat problem got out of control.
The pandemic.
There were swarms of locusts across Africa and the Middle East all through the pandemic. And there was the murder hornet. You remember the murder hornet, which is this gigantic hornet that's like a small aircraft carrier that will, if it stings you, it's going to be with you for a while. That's moved into the Pacific Northwest and now gangs of poison toads. So if I ask you, murder hornets, swarms of locusts, rat army, or gangs of giant poison toads, which do you choose?
Like that I want or that I don't want?
That you have to have.
Okay, say it again. Murder hornets, gangs
murder
of toads.
Murder hornets, swarms of locusts, rat army, gangs of giant poison toads.
I'm okay with the locusts.
Okay, really?
Yeah.
Okay.
Well, I don't think they'll hurt me.
Yeah, no. They're
I really don't like the murder hornets.
Out.
That's really scary to me.
Those do
things
scare
are
me.
Terrifying.
They yeah. tear me.
The toads I feel like I could avoid, so I could deal with those.
True, yeah.
And rat army?
Oh, no. No. Oh, yeah. Rat, yeah, rat army's scary to me.
So
I really
you're saying
don't like
gangs
that.
Of poison toads is your choice?
Or locusts.
Or locusts.
Yeah.
Okay. Or locusts. Lindsay, what do you think?
I think
you have
are,
to have one.
I think people are too hard on the murder hornets because murder hornets, I feel like they come from the family of bees and, you know, we're losing bees at a rapid rate and you got to save the bees. So I feel like I can't get rid of them.
Okay.
I don't
so
like
that means right now in your life, you would deal with either locusts, a rat army, or gangs of poison toads.
Well, I don't mind the locusts because I feel like the cicadas, whatever they're called, I feel like I've dealt with those enough in the Midwest to know, like, those don't bother me. I'm going to go with the rat thing, the rats, because I'm not a big fan of varmints.
Varmints.
They gross me out.
So that's the thing you would not want.
Oh, yes. That's the thing you would not want.
Yes, yes. That's the
but
worst.
You would
I think me too.
Murder hornets.
Yeah, I would accept all of the above except for the varmint.
Okay. Jorge, what about you?
I wouldn't want the rats. The rats.
Yeah, me either.
That's out.
The rats are done.
Get out of here.
Yeah. Yeah, rats are done. And which one would you live with?
The locust, I think.
You know what's funny? Like, locusts are really intense. That's like a mental. It's like waterboarding in a way. It's like a mental torture.
Oh, they're like, you're in sort of a blizzard of
grasshoppers,
basically. Yeah. Locusts are not all they're cracked up to be. Yeah, you know what they say. Locusts aren't all they're cracked up to be. If I had one, I think the rat army's definitely out. I lived in New York. I saw so many rats.
That's really
I saw
bad.
Big, honking, gigantic rats sometimes in New York City when I lived there. Murder hornets scare the living hell out of me.
Yeah.
Swarms of locusts would be a mess. Can you imagine a swarm of
that's
locusts
really
in
bad,
Los
yeah.
Angeles? Terrible.
Yeah.
So I think I could avoid gangs of giant poison
oh,
toads.
Wow.
That would be my choice.
Really?
For living with. Yeah, rat army, absolutely not. Gangs of giant poison toads, I'll learn to live with them. I'll learn to live with them.
Wow.
All right, there you have it. There is your fast track for today. Coming up next, I brought this up during the coin flip moment.
Ooh.
Last night, the most annoying thing at the end of that Philly-Atlanta game. Do you know what I'm talking about?
Yeah.
Let's do it next. Mason in Ireland, 710 ESPN. And
hi, this is ESPN's Mike Greenberg, and ESPN Bet is ready to take you through all the biggest sports moments this spring. The official sports book of ESPN has exclusive offers and markets from Scott Van Pelt, Stephen A. Smith, and me. From the playoff intensity to finally getting out to the ballpark, there's no better time for sports fans. Sign up today, and new users get $100 in bonus bets for making any sportsbook bet. Download ESPN Bet today. What a play.
Must be 21 plus and present in select states. Gambling problem? Call 1-800-GAMBLER. Terms and conditions apply. See app for details.
And we got Momo in here for Ireland today. Ireland will be back on Monday after yet another vacation for John Ireland. Guy
okay.
lives on vacation.
Hot, so, yellow, black. Okay.
LA fanatic fan tweets this. Is Ramona Shelburne not a Lakers fan? Is Ramona Shelburne not a Lakers fan? Ramona, how do you answer that?
That is not my job.
What is not your job?
I'm not. I can't be fans of anybody.
Yeah, she's not. She's not a fan. She's a reporter. She's an objective NBA reporter.
But
like,
don't
yeah,
you
she
root,
can secretly
underneath
root.
It all, don't you root a little bit?
I think that got out of my system a while ago. I think I root more for people that I know and I like. I grew up. Yeah, I. This is how I always answer this question. I grew up in LA. I was a Lakers and a Dodgers fan. I never hated the Clippers. They just weren't very good, so there wasn't. You know, I was fine with the Angels too. I think I watched both. You know, the Lakers and the Clippers, but
yeah,
the Lakers
right.
were winning. I grew up in the Showtime '80s. The Showtime
yeah,
Lakers.
Yeah, sure. So,
okay. But when you become a journalist and when you do this as your profession, one, some of the I don't want to say the romance, okay, it's the wrong word, okay, but like your role changes. Like you do this every day. You go into the game and you have to cover all teams. I'm a national NBA reporter. Like I have to cover all 30 teams.
Yeah.
So I have to.
So I guess the answer is no.
Yeah, that's my answer. And the truth is, you know who I root for? I root for me.
You root for the best story.
I root for the best story because I like to write about best stories. I also root for what makes my life easier. You know, like when it gets down to the NBA finals and like we've all been on the road for 6 weeks and it's like game five, like, yeah, I want the closeout. Close them out. Let's go. Let's get on home.
You know, when I used to cover the Indians and the Cavs when I worked in Cleveland, I was surprised at how easily I lost my fandom for the Indians because I was at the ballpark every day covering them. And so when they went to the World Series in 2016 and they lost, like, I wasn't even that mad about it. But I purposely, like, I covered LeBron a lot in his first stint in Cleveland.
Right.
But I purposely kind of, like, removed myself from covering the Cavs. I was still at the press conferences and everything, but I wasn't writing about them every day or doing, you know, radio shows or anything about them every day in the finals. And so I was very appreciative of that as the things went on, because I was so happy to be able to like have actual joy and be able to celebrate and be super excited when they won, because I didn't feel that with the Indians at all.
Interesting. Yeah, so covering them allowed you to be a fan.
It's true. Like that's how I have been for the NFL, because I haven't had to cover the NFL in LA for most of my professional
career. You're kind of like that for the Dodgers.
I don't really cover them anymore, so I can I occasionally write a feature here and there.
You occasionally do a story, but yeah.
Yeah, it's like I kind of write features here and there. Like, I don't really cover baseball anymore. So it changes your relationship with it.
And then what about NFL?
Raider fan.
You don't write NFL.
Yeah, I don't cover the NFL at all, so I can just be a Raider fan.
Hey, what's up, Holmes?
It's fun.
Yeah, Raider fan.
Sorry. Yeah.
What's up, Holmes? All right, so I wanted to get this. Christiane Eastwood, who's one of my favorites on Twitter.
Yeah, she's fun.
Rat armies rule. Hashtag Willard. Hashtag Ben.
Yeah.
If you're old school, those are some great movies about rat infestations that scare me and creep me out to this day. The other thing I wanted to get in here is I got a DM from somebody named Khalib Nasty or Cabe Nasty. Says, when are we going to get the Mason meal at McDonald's? It is a crime against humanity that J Balvin, Travis Scott, and BTS get partnerships with McDonald's and you don't. And he remembers my exact McDonald's order from my days when I used to work in New York City. And on Fridays, I would go pick up McDonald's and get stoned and do nothing all day.
That sounds fun.
It's 2 Big Macs, 10-piece chicken nuggets, a whole bunch of hot mustard sauce, 2 large fries, a caramel sundae, and an apple pie to dip into the sundae.
Yeah.
That was the Mason
meal. Yeah.
I knew how to put it away. Oh, yeah. Back in my days,
let me tell you something.
235, 240.
I'm going to tell you something.
Yeah.
My husband has a McDonald's thing.
Okay.
Every Saturday, he orders McDonald's on Postmates. It's like become a thing. And his order has evolved. He used to do just like some double cheeseburgers and the McChickens because those are like 99 cents.
Yeah.
Now he has a whole concoction that he makes, okay? He does 2 double cheeseburgers, extra cheese, a McChicken, large fries, and then what he does is he takes a bunch of the breads off and he puts them all together.
Wait,
so we're talking 4 patties and a McChicken, like so the chicken's in the middle of the 4 patties. Yeah, yeah, yeah.
And
see?
He puts it into one sandwich?
Yeah, and so he's like, I'm saving on the bread.
Oh, that's that's
I've tasted it. It's kind of weird. But apparently that's like it's a thing.
Wait, so no sauce, nothing, just cheese.
Extra cheese, extra mayo on the McChicken, right?
But
so
only one bun.
But no, on the top and the bottom, yeah.
Yeah, top and the bottom.
Does that sound good or gross?
No, that sounds really interesting and
actually,
good.
It sounds interesting. I'll be honest, it would probably appeal to my 17-year-old palate.
Yeah. It's kind of weird with the chicken and the burger together. I don't, it's not something I would have thought of or chosen, but he's into it now.
Yeah.
Okay, every Saturday.
I wanted to get one thing in here if you're a baseball fan. Last night when I was getting off the air yesterday, the Mets were playing and Jake DeGrom was pitching. Uh-huh. And I always try to put Jake DeGrom in whenever he's pitching on my MLB pass. So he struck out 8 of the first 9 batters he faced. which was incredible. Then he left with a sore arm, a shoulder issue.
Yeah.
And so I was worried about that when I got up today, because I think he's one of the most must-see players in the game right now. And he's going to be fine. They tested his shoulder. He's going to be fine, and he's not going to have to go on the injured list. So that's a piece of good news. All right, so, Momo, last night I'm watching – I watched both games. I watched both NBA games. I watched the Dodgers. I mean, there are games on here all the time. So – at the end of the Atlanta-Philly game, which was pretty incredible, the way Philly collapsed.
It really was.
They were up 26 and collapsed and lost to the Hawks in a critical, critical game five. Here's what bothered me. Final 2 minutes, two things. First, Trae Young, to take the lead, for Atlanta to take the lead, did one of those twisty, falling, sidestep shots that drew the three foul shots. And I thought, that is a bunch of garbage. They really need to do something. He was not. See, to me, what you've got to look at is the intent. Was his intent to shoot the basketball towards the basket? Mm. Or is he just twisting up and trying to fall in a certain way to be able to get a call? To me, it's kind of easy to determine. The NBA needs to make that decision. Was that a legitimate shot attempt, or was he just trying to draw
the foul? Well,
that
is the rules that they are thinking of changing, Mace. Those are the rules that Woj reported this a couple of days ago. The competition committee has been in looking into this, and they call them the unnatural shots that are like James Harden,
unnatural
Trae
shots.
Young,
that's a good way to describe them.
They're like artists at this. They're incredible at drawing those fouls. I mean, they've learned how to game the system and draw those fouls.
Yep.
And the competition committee is looking at that. Now, I think it's going to be a really hard one for the refs. Really hard.
Yes.
How do you prove it?
Yeah, but I mean, it's a judgment call. Like everything else in the NBA, it's a judgment call.
Yeah.
Hey, that handshake. Hey, that blocking. Hey, that charge. I mean, this is what officials do. They make judgment calls. They're all judgment calls. They're all, I mean, there's a subjectivity to everything a ref actually does.
Mm-hmm.
So, the other thing, and again, I go back to the final 2 minutes of that game. There's about a minute and a half left. And Philly, the ball maybe goes off Philly, maybe goes off Atlanta, something down at the Philly end. And the original call was Atlanta ball. And you could see it on TV that it clearly was Atlanta ball. And yet, there was a review, and I deliberately looked at the clock, a review that lasted 5 minutes, an official review to try to determine who that ball went off on. And we saw it in the replays that were shown on TV very clearly that it was off Philly. But it took them 5 full minutes to reach that determination. And the right call was already on the floor.
Yeah.
I think the NBA needs to do away with instant replay altogether. Let the chips fall where they may. Get rid of instant replay in the NBA. It just slows down the game and detracts. And by the way, same thing with those goofy three-point shots where they're trying to draw a foul. They stop the flow of the game.
Yeah, they do.
And what we want to see is the up and down and the grace and the ballet and the, you know, all that stuff, the athleticism and the beauty of it. It's a brilliant game. Why stop it? Why slow it down, particularly at an incredibly important moment like that?
I think it also, I thought I was worried actually because Atlanta was really making a comeback, and usually when a team's coming back, anything like that that stops the momentum actually really hurts the team that's making the comeback. Usually it gives the, you know, would have given the Sixers time to rest, time to refocus and, you know, kind of settle themselves down because they've been blowing this 26-point lead. It actually didn't happen this time. Like the Philly just kept on blowing the lead.
They just kept on going. They just kept on going. And you know what? I think now Doc Rivers is responsible for 4 of the 6 biggest collapses
in
playoff history.
That's a rough one.
I mean, how much of that is on him?
I have various theories.
4 of the big 6s.
So hard. I feel. I don't feel like it should be on him, but it is, right? Because he's the coach and the with a constant. Now he also was the head coach when the Clippers came back and beat the Spurs in 7 games.
Right.
When they lost Game 5 at home, they went down 3-2, and then they won 2 in a row. Okay. That was that. So this has happened before. But I think there's 2 things going on with Doc. He is an incredible leader. He is a great, and one of the problems that he had in LA last year was he was such a good leader that it didn't make anybody else on the court be a leader. Didn't make any, it was like, okay, they just look, if the players
so he's
are always
so much an alpha that nobody else emerges as an alpha on
the
floor.
They just look to him all the time, but he's not actually out on the court.
Right.
Right? And sometimes
so that's that's a personality thing.
Yeah, I mean, it's something that should be a positive, but it just hasn't been. Some of that, I think, is just personnel-wise of just whoever was on those teams. Like, the Clippers did not have a great leader on the court last year.
No,
I don't know that
they'd
have them this year either. I think they've gotten a little better, but they went and got Rondo. He's great, but he doesn't play that much.
Hasn't played very much at all. That surprises me.
Yeah. So some of that is it's just a function. Like, do you ever have that? Are you the same guy with every host? Are you Mason with every host that you work with?
I think mostly, maybe a little bit different on my podcast.
Yeah, you're a little different. I've heard.
I'm a little different on the podcast with my partner Sue Kalinske on that.
But I think you're Mason with every host. Now I'm Momo, but I'm different with every host I'm with.
Yes, you are.
I think I'm different with you than I am with John Ireland. I think I'm different with you than I am with Sedano when I fill in on that show. Like, I am a perfect number two because I can blend with anybody.
Is it right to say you're fungible?
Yeah, that's fine.
What does that mean? Am I right about
it? Yeah, that's a good word. Fungible means it's a little bit shapeshifter. You can change. Change.
Interchangeable.
Well, no, that's a bad way of looking at it. Not just interchangeable. Like, you change to fit who you want. Interchangeable would be more like you can put somebody else in my role and it doesn't matter.
Right.
I think I seem a little like so with Ireland we're a little more serious. I think we stay on topic more. He also is different as a lead host than he is as a two.
The show is really different. I mean, I you guys don't you don't need to hear this because you know it. But the show is different based on when it's me and John or when it's me and Momo. It's a different show.
Yeah,
it's a fun show. It's a different show. It's just different. That's interesting. But yeah, you're different. I'm the same all the time.
I think you are too.
Yeah, I think I'm pretty consistently Mason.
Well, I think you are a little different when we get O'Shea in here.
That's true. Yeah. That's true. He's a very big star. All right, coming up next for you, Momo, it is the anniversary of something that we all live through and talk about to this day. Do you know what I'm talking about?
No, not at all.
I will tell you what it is. Coming up next, Mason Ireland, 710 ESPN.
10 seconds on the clock. How many things can you name that are always growing? Your relationships, your skills, your customer base. How about businesses on Shopify? Shopify is the global commerce platform that helps you sell at every stage of your business. From the launch your online shop stage, to the first real life store stage, all the way to the did we just hit a million orders stage. Shopify's there to help you grow. Sign up for a $1 per month trial period at shopify.com/network, all lowercase. Go to shopify.com/network now to grow your business. No matter what stage you're in, shopify.com/network.
So, 1994 was the year. Momo's in for John, by the way. Lindsay's here. Jorge's here. 1994, June the 17th. You have no idea what happened on that day?
Now that you mention it, I have an idea.
Yes. It is the day that a well-known athlete retired, got into the back seat of a Bronco, and led police on an hours-long slow-speed chase.
That sound effect.
Jorge, that was a pretty good addition of a sound effect, right? This is actual sound from that
day.
No,
it's not. It's really not. Okay.
It's not. No, don't lie.
It's great, though. Okay.
All right. So, Momo, has there been a bigger... The world watched that in a way that we haven't watched anything prior. I mean, bigger than a Super Bowl. I mean, everybody watched OJ in the slow speed chase. Where were you when it was going on?
1994, I was in high school.
Yep.
I would have been a freshman in high school, I think. And I don't remember where I was, but I definitely was watching it at some point. I must have come home from school or something because it was in the afternoon, right? And we were all every day following that trial. I mean, not that trial, the case, right? It wasn't the trial yet, but it was the case. It was like, it was the news. I remember at one point I drove by his house. Remember when, like, go to the Rockingham?
On purpose you
drove
by?
Yeah, just to, like, check it out and see what's going on.
Interesting.
I'm like one of those looky-loos. But I remember... it was just heating up, and we were all hooked into the story. They were after him. That was like, I just remember even the murder was a huge
story. Gigantic.
So this was the beginning of it, and it was this dawning realization that okay, it wasn't just that Nicole Brown Simpson had been murdered, and Ron, what's his last name?
Goldman.
Thank you. That was shocking. But when you first heard OJ named as a suspect, it was like, OJ, what?
Yeah, everybody. OJ? And it was unthinkable.
Yeah, it was unthinkable.
It was absolutely unthinkable. I was on the air. I was like, you know, it was right there. I wouldn't say it. I wouldn't say it because I just didn't believe it.
Yeah.
And obviously, the facts came out. But the thing that interests me is, now, Lindsay, you were very young, right? How old were you when the slow speed chase happened? 94?
I mean, I was in elementary school. I was probably in like third or fourth grade, I think.
Now, did you know what was going on?
No, I briefly like remember it in my head, but I know like at the time I had no clue like what was going on or the significance of it. It wasn't until like I remember being in school the day that the verdict was announced, and our lunchroom lady had the TV on, which normally they didn't do that. We didn't have a TV on at lunch, but they had like the TV, one of the TVs in there, and they were watching it live on TV. I do remember that.
Yeah.
But other than that, I had no idea what was going on.
The car chase, Mace, was the time when I think we all thought, oh, he might have actually done it. Because I think my first inclination was to think, no, not he wouldn't have killed her. Like, he wouldn't have done that. I mean, and so I think when he did that, it made him look really guilty. Made him look guilty.
I was on the air in New York.
Okay.
Doing a nationally syndicated show in 94 on this date. And so it was really strange because here I am doing this national talk, so general interest talk show, so issues and politics and all that stuff. And all of a sudden this chase is going on, and I'm watching it on monitors in New York City, and it's going on. I lived in Westwood at that time. It's going on literally in my neighborhood.
Wow.
I'm like, oh, my God, it's happening right by my house that this is going on. And to describe it to a national audience that night was actually, just a crazy experience. 95 million people watched the OJ slow speed chase.
What's that rating compared to, like, Super Bowl?
Let's see. How many people watched the Super Bowl? This had to be bigger, didn't it?
Seems like it. I mean, I feel like worldwide a lot of people watch Super Bowl.
Yeah, that's true.
Because that
91 million people watch the Super Bowl.
Yeah.
So it's very comparable to a Super Bowl.
But even in 94, that comparatively speaking, that's incredible.
Yeah, it's amazing. It's amazing. Yeah. And what a surreal time. And then where did you watch the verdict?
I don't know where.
You were
but
in school when it happened. It happened like at 10 o'clock
in
the morning.
We were watching. We totally had it on.
They showed it in school?
Yeah. Like, I was in high school, so we were all watching at lunch or wherever it was. Like, we definitely watched. We would watch it daily. Like, that was like my friends and I talked about it every day. We were like kind of nerdy. We were into the lawyers and stuff.
Everybody was.
It was Kardashian. I mean, Robert Kardashian.
You know, there's a terrible tragedy,
Bailey.
But there was a kind of, I don't know.
It was a daily soap opera.
All the lawyers became stars, and it was. It was a soap opera.
Yeah.
And when it ended, I still cannot believe the verdict was what the verdict was.
I know, it really, really was incredible.
After seeing all that evidence, I cannot believe it.
I mean, there's just so many things from that trial that are just references now that I guess if you were born after 94, you wouldn't know. But like, if the glove
doesn't fit, you must have quit.
I mean, like, everybody just knows that now. You don't have to reference it.
Yeah. No, it was a crazy, crazy stretch. So 1994 in this state. The other thing people forget, and you guys, I don't know if you know this or not, but the NBA Finals were going on, the 94 Finals. It was the Knicks, and it was
Houston Rockets.
And because this chase was going on, they took the game and they just put it into a corner of the screen. And the game was going on just in the corner of the screen while the chase was on the rest of the screen. It was amazing to see this event dwarf the NBA Finals so that they were just like a little corner of the screen.
So cool.
Amazing. Yeah. Amazing. Yeah. All right, coming up next for you is Radio Tinder. Woo! Linz is going to throw a bunch of stuff at us. Mason in Ireland, 710 ES.
Now, let's talk about the play of the week. The pressure to follow up Hypnotic and Cognac weighing heavy on the team. Hypnotic was in the cup, blue and ready for the play. And boom! Añejo Tequila came in with a smooth assist to Hypnotic's tropical fruit finish. Shaken, strained, poured. It was green and good! The playmaking splash
Fresh shifted the tempo. Another great cocktail from the Hypnotic team. Every season is Hypnotic and Tequila season.
Hypnotic Liqueur, Bardstown, Kentucky, 17% alcohol by volume. Hypnotic reminds you to think wisely, drink wisely.
All right, so Linz, what do you got for us today?
Well, as always, just a quick reminder to follow me on Instagram, @LindsayBaseball.
Okay.
I'm getting close to you, Mace. Getting close.
So out of curiosity, so Morales just gave your Instagram handle. Why do you need to repeat it?
Because a lot of times people in general like tune out during the commercial breaks, like mentally. And mentally kind of like, you know, when they're and then once they hear us start talking again, then they're like, oh, the show's back on.
So you're saying that people don't listen to Chris Morales?
No, I'm not saying that. I feel like
what do you have against Chris Morales?
I actually have nothing against Chris Morales. I think he does an excellent job on our show. If anything, you guys are the one who kill him all the time or arguing back and forth about what he said about your swing and stuff like that.
Oh, yeah, it's true. It's true. All right, what do you got?
All right, so last week, the finale of Keeping Up with the Kardashians aired on E! After 20 seasons.
I actually watched it.
Did you really?
Yeah, I watched it. Yeah, I did. I watched the very first episode from the very beginning, okay. And I watched the last episode.
That's it? Just those two?
Those two. I've seen two episodes of the Kardashians. There it is.
Oh, I like that show. But anyway, they recently taped a reunion special where the famous family
I don't need
shared
a reunion. Okay, go ahead.
I know, because like they are a family, but
I mean, the whole show is just this.
Yeah, their whole lives are completely separate.
But like
you know?
The reunion, I think Andy Cohen is doing. It's gonna be like one of those Housewives specials.
Yeah. So the famous family shared what's next for each of them, with Andy Cohen as the host. So Cohen asked Kim Kardashian about her future, in which she hopes to pass the bar exam because she's failed it twice now. I thought she passed it, but she actually failed it twice.
Yeah, she's failed it. She failed it on the show this year, too.
Right, and because she wants to become a lawyer.
Yep.
So Cohen asked her whether she plans to pull back on presenting herself so suggestively or sexily in the next phase of her professional life. And Kim Kardashian said, I thought about this, and then I thought, you can do it all. You can do whatever you want. I remember going to the White House one time and I was like, ooh, I just posted a bikini pic, you know? I hope they're not looking at my Instagram while I'm in here. And then I thought, you know what? You've got to be you. Kim said that she finds it very freeing to be able to feel like, F it, I'm 40. I'm in the best shape of my life. And if I want to post a bikini picture, I'm going to do it. Do you guys agree with Kim's outlook for both her and like her potential professional future and then for yourself?
Mama?
Yeah, I actually agree with this. Look, first of all, I love Legally Blonde. So I have watched all of those movies several times. And
what's that thing, the snap thing?
Bend and snap.
There you go. There
but
you
like
go.
That's the whole Reese Witherspoon thing where you have to, you know, she signs her with the pink pen or the hearts. And I mean, like you can be
scented stationery.
Yeah, scented stationery. I mean, you could be beautiful and a lawyer and sexy and all of that. And you should not apologize for who you are and what you're into. I also think that doesn't mean that people won't take you seriously. If you pass the bar, you're good lawyers.
Sure.
It doesn't matter. I think it's great. It's something to add to the resume, not detract from it. I also think with Kim, she is who she is. Like, there's really no changing that reputation and brand that you've built. And you brought this up earlier in the show. Keep the main thing the main thing. Like, people want to see you because you're Kim Kardashian. So just be Kim Kardashian.
You know, I've spent time in a courtroom. I was in the middle of a 6-week or 7-week trial. And I was thinking about this when Lindsay brought it up today. And whether or not Kim Kardashian, had she had this area of specialty, antitrust, would she have been a good attorney or somebody I'd want on it? And I think, unfortunately, half the world really loves Kim Kardashian and half the world really hates. So I think she would divide a jury. Mm. I don't think I would ever want to be represented by Kim Kardashian. I mean, I assume what she's going to do is what she did previously with Trump.
Prison reform.
She got somebody released from prison who was unjustly convicted.
Yeah.
I would assume those are the kinds of things she's going to be doing as opposed to giving the closing arguments. But, hey, you know, Kim Kardashian looks great. She should continue to be the social media superstar that she is. And, by the way, that whole show is just picking up and moving to what streaming service?
Disney, Hulu.
It's Disney Hulu?
Yeah, it's going to be on Hulu.
So the Kardashians, you'll be able to keep up with them very soon on Disney Hulu.
Wait, so they're still doing the show? It's just going to be on streaming now?
They're saying that it's not the same show, but, you know, because there's different logistics to it, but let's be serious. It's going to be the same show.
It's going to be the same
show. I kind of wonder if, you know, like when Kobe was doing his documentaries at the end of his career, he kind of got used to having cameras around. Like he sort of liked it. Like he talked to the cameramen and the camera guys, and like the producers. Like he sort of liked having someone to talk to and sort of narrate his life to. I wonder what it's like for them to not have the cameras around. I think they just probably got used to it.
Yeah, I was going to say, after 14 years, I feel like they have to, when they're filming, they have to just snap back into like filming mode and just be like, you know what I mean? I feel like it's like riding a bike to them where like they know like what to say and what not to say. Yeah. And again, I'm sure they have like creative control if there's things that happen on camera that they don't want. But still, I feel like they all seem like they're very well versed in being filmed. You know, they're putting on a show.
The Hulu deal they signed, and this is all we know right now, they revealed that the family signed a major multi-year deal to create new content for the streaming service. Nothing has been revealed about what fans can expect. So they are going to be on Hulu. We don't know what that's necessarily going to look like, but I would imagine that's a great move for Disney/Hulu to get the Kardashians. I thought there were some nice moments in that finale.
I watched that show. I don't watch it. You know what's fun about that show, too? You could literally watch any episode from any season. It doesn't matter what's happening in real life doesn't matter. You don't have to keep
up. Makes no difference. You don't need any of the plot points. You can turn it on and you know exactly what you're going to get.
Yeah, it's all good. It's fun.
But you know what's funny? I actually was watching it last night or the night before, and it was season 19, so the season before the finale, and it was when Tristan was coming back around and like hanging out with the family again, and him and Chloe were having their first dinner since they split up without their daughter, because you know they're still co-parenting, and it was just really interesting to see, like, looking back, knowing what ended up happening again. It's just interesting seeing like how Kim is like championing for Tristan. Like, oh, I'm so glad he's finally grown up and matured and wants to be part of the family. And he realizes that he messed up. And it's like, not so fast.
Oops. All right, what's next?
All right. So it was just recently announced that Channing Tatum, my dream man, if anyone wants to know, he's going to be a large part of Zoe Kravitz's directorial debut in her new movie. And the two have already become very close friends. And like many friendships, theirs had a bit of adversity, but it was right from the start with a confrontation about Crocs. During a recent interview, Channing told the story from when they first met. He said, quote, "When someone can just come out and tell me I should not be wearing Crocs and be so adamant about it, she completely convinced me, and now I never wear Crocs anymore." Zoe, of course, said that she was just trying to be a good friend because she didn't think that Channing could pull off the look like some other celebrities. Channing added, "I feel cooler, and her point of view on me and Crocs was totally legit." Mm. She had a very good argument. Do you guys take fashion advice from your friends, or do you just wear whatever you want regardless of what they think? Swipe left or swipe right?
I tend to wear whatever I want. Now, the exception to that is if I'm really looking stupid, Juan will say something. He'll say, like, "Don't go out like that." going to golf the other day, that shirt, you don't want to be wearing that shirt, stuff like that. But no, I wear what I want. I'm gonna go back to being, I was trying to dress up right before the pandemic. I was trying to dress nicely every day and to have
I remember that
quote unquote wardrobe and all that stuff. Well, none of this stuff fits anymore. I've picked up a little weight, so I'm gonna go back to sweatpants, jeans, and a hoodie. Jeans and a hoodie is the official attire for the Mason and Ireland show.
I listen to what people say. I do, because the truth is, like, I'm not super fashionable, and I don't always know what to dress, you know, to buy even. And so, like, I'll ask people, like, "Hey, what do you think of this?" Or, like, I'll always ask the makeup artist or the hairstylist who do the TV stuff for us. I'll ask my producers. I remember I would ask Rachel Nichols sometimes, like, "Hey, how did you dress when you were pregnant?" Like, I always ask things like that, because the truth is I need ideas. I need to know these things, and other people have thought about them way more deeply and come to good conclusions about what to wear on how to dress.
Yeah.
So you guys don't have like a stylist ever on set?
You know what? There are some people here at ESPN who do have that, but I am not one of the people deemed worthy of that, which it seems bad because I need more help than anyone.
I was going to say, I think that you are very worthy of that.
Launch the campaign. Stylist for Momo.
But you're right. I feel like that's something I've always struggled with in my career because I'm honestly like used to always working with men.
Yeah.
In most, if not very many cases, I'm one of the few, if not only women, working in like a, you know, a locker room or whatever. Obviously women have gotten more prominent in locker rooms over time. It's not like I'm, you know, I've been doing this for decades, but anyway, I just think like being a young person and being around men and having to try and navigate that without another woman to be like, hey, is this okay to wear?
Yeah, totally.
I remember one of the first games I covered, one of the first Indians games I covered, I was wearing it was so hot. It was like 95 degrees that day. And so then you knew they were going to have the press box windows open. So it's going to be hot in there. So I wore like the ESPN Cleveland polo shirt. And I had like these like Bermuda shorts, like white Bermuda shorts on.
Bermuda shorts?
Bermuda shorts. Yeah, they're like... They're like longer shorts.
Yeah, I know.
So they're not like they were in style at the time, you know.
Yes.
But anyway, I wore those because I was like, I'm going to be super uncomfortable, and I'm either going to wear a dress or I'm going to wear this, and I don't want to wear a dress because I don't want people like my first impression to be like somebody wearing a sundress in the press box. So I thought it was more professional to go with the polo shirt and the shorts. And the guy I was going with that I worked with at the time, he was a producer, and he was like, you can't go to the stadium wearing shorts. Do you have like pants you could put on? I was like, they're down to my knees. And he's like, yeah, but you can't, that's not a good look. You can't. And he was, mind you, he was wearing shorts.
Oh.
And he was like, yeah, you can't wear shorts. And I was like, well, what am I supposed to wear? It's 90 degrees. He's like, you have to put pants on. And I was like, I'm going to be so hot. And he was
you
like,
can totally
sorry.
Wear shorts. That is totally wrong.
Right.
I've workshopped this. Okay. This is one of those things I
had. Wait, you've actually workshopped it?
Yeah. Cause I had the same, I know exactly what she's talking about. When you go to a baseball game, you're outdoors and it's hot and you're down on the field and you're in the clubhouse and generally speaking, I don't wear shorts to professional things. I don't think that's, and if you want to have your legs cooler, you can do a dress. But in baseball, that is the exception because when you're out at spring training, when you're out at the field,
I think
I think it's okay. But they have to be good shorts and they have to be like professional looking shorts. They can't just be like athletic shorts.
They were nice.
Out in.
Yeah, they were like nice, short, like white express Bermuda shorts. Yeah. I thought they were fine, but apparently they weren't.
You know, I absolutely have to look good, I'm capable of looking good. There are very few times that I absolutely have to look good.
So I did work with a stylist once. Yeah, I worked with a stylist once. She took me shopping. And my biggest takeaway was I need to wear black pants that fit my legs that are not baggy. Because anything that's baggy makes your legs look fatter.
Yeah.
So true. Words to live by. Don't wear baggy pants. They make your legs look fatter.
Lynch, what do you got next?
Okay, so last one here. The home where Charles Manson's followers brutally murdered the LaBiancas 5 decades ago has found a buyer. After nearly 8 months on the market, the home was forced to sell at a discounted price of $1,875,000. So Zach Baggins, a paranormal investigator and actor, he had purchased the home back in 2019 for $1.89 million with a plan to shoot a project there. But he abandoned that idea a year later and initially attempted to sell it for $2.2 million, but there was no interest. The new owner of the home is someone who wishes to keep a low profile. Would you guys be able to live in that house or in any house where you knew someone was murdered?
Mace, isn't this house in Chatsworth? Where's the house, Lindsay?
I think it is.
Chatsworth?
I think it is.
It's
sure
literally
it
around the corner from
it's
my house.
It's in your neighborhood, yeah.
Yeah. There's like a, when you drive from West Hills area towards Simi Valley, there you go through this little canyon there.
Yeah.
It's technically in Chatsworth. And like, I know where the turnoff is. I know where, I think I know where this thing is.
So, let's put this in.
Yeah.
So is it a nice house?
Yeah. I mean, it's almost a $2 million house. So yes,
is it
it's
comparable
a nice house.
To your house, Momo?
No, that's bigger. My house is not a $2 million.
So you should have gone through it when they were showing it.
If you could get that house for half the price of your
absolutely
house,
not.
Absolutely not.
Absolutely not. I no amount of sage or smudging is going to take some of that out. Those are bad things have happened there.
See, I know for a fact that when I lived at my house in Westwood, I knew that the woman who owned the house had died in the kitchen.
Yeah, that's
but
hard.
She wasn't violently killed.
Me out.
She just passed away.
Yeah, but still.
But that's not like a horrible, I mean, people die.
No, that's not a horror. It's like it depends on the degree of.
Yeah.
Like I think at one point Trent Reznor from Nine Inch Nails bought the house where Sharon Tate was killed.
Yeah.
And I'm like, that's just twisted. That's totally
twisted.
Well,
this was like the same scene there.
It was really evil, like
with like the blood on the walls and stuff like that.
Yeah,
wasn't
I couldn't.
It?
Do,
Might
I
be
couldn't
in Los Feliz. There's a couple of them.
It is. It is Los Feliz.
Not the Chatsworth. Yeah, okay, Los Feliz.
Yeah, I.
There's
I
one in Los Feliz. There's one in Chatsworth. There's a few of them. There's a couple different spots. I don't think I could deal with a murder. No, I could deal with somebody like have died in the bedroom or died in whatever. Because I that's why you sage and smudge and you just change the energy. But murders. Mm.
Yeah, murders is really hard to deal with. We were just talking about. You know, the O.J. Simpson car chase back in 1994 in this state. You know, that place where...
On Rockingham.
Where it happened. No, where it happened.
Yeah.
Was it on Rockingham?
Yeah, Rockingham.
That became... They just completely redid it.
Yeah, they just demolished the house.
They demolished the house.
I was going to say, didn't they have to level it because people were, like, driving by?
Yeah, one of those people.
They leveled it and built a new house there. Somebody lives there now, and I think that's okay if it's not the same house. But no, I couldn't live in a house where a grisly murder took place. All right, there you have it. There is your Radio Tinder for today. Coming up next.
And wait, don't forget to follow me on Instagram at Lindsay Baseball. Thanks.
Momo, at what point does it become begging?
It's like a
I don't have to beg. I'm just reminding.
Okay.
Begging is totally different.
I mean, but what are we going to get if we follow you? Like, what's
you're,
in it for
you're
us?
You're going to be very entertained. And
very entertained.
Amazing
very entertained.
Content. Yes. Amazing.
Hashtag content.
Yeah. Okay. Hashtag content. Coming up next for you, it's been a really busy day in the NBA. Clippers won last night. really good game. Philly collapses and Atlanta comes back to win. Rick Carlisle gone from the Dallas Mavericks. There's so much of that going on. Plus, there is one fast food item that I'm seeing advertised constantly that I will never ever eat out of principle.
I like it.
It's coming up. Mason, Ireland, 710 ESPN.
Picture this. You arrive at your hotel. You have an important online meeting lined up with clients from all across the country. You have your laptop open, ready to begin, and the Wi-Fi is so terrible, you can't even connect. These types of stressful situations happen all the time, but they don't have to. When you book a room at La Quinta by Wyndham, you have access to their free high-speed Wi-Fi, so you can take care of those critical emails, join your meetings on time, and even unwind by streaming your favorite shows without having to worry. Tonight, La Quinta. Tomorrow, you shine. Book direct at LQ.com.